All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 58 in this American History program of History at Our House for the Elementary Class. Our topic today is the Revolutionary War. So we have seen this crisis escalate from a case pertaining to writs of assistance to a great argument over taxation, and finally to a great struggle to defend inalienable individual rights. By the time we get to 1776, we have already a war that's underway, but with the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson gives it a crystal clear meaning that liberty is not representation. Liberty is not a constant argument with the king. Liberty is something else. Liberty is having a government that is dedicated to securing your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is something worth fighting for. And so now we have the defining idea of the revolution, and it's going to be necessary to put our lives and our sacred honor on the line for that idea. So now the Revolutionary War becomes very intense. The British, of course, are coming, and they are going to bring their allies, and they are going to invade the colonies. The most powerful military in the world is coming. What do we do? What do the Americans do to fight such a powerful adversary? It's going to be a fascinating struggle here. Abby, that was kind of meant as a rhetorical question, as you might imagine. And for a moment, I just want to bring up this map of the colonies that you're familiar with, because it was on your test, and you know what these states are and everything here. But I also want to highlight some things about the British strategy using the map, and also the American strategy. And so one of the things that's not on this map, but I hope you will remember it from your geography work, is that from this point here, that I'm going to go ahead and ask people what they think this is. If I put a spot here, what's that? Yeah, just a minute while I get rid of something, pardon me, that just doesn't seem to be able to perform properly. Okay, so, sorry, Abby, I had to remove the annotation, but I think you guessed it, so I'm going to go ahead and let you answer as I return to placing the annotation. Go ahead.
New York City.
New York, right? Right here is New York, and this is Long Island, as it's called. It's really Long Island. And so, and over here is New Jersey. Okay, good. So if we've got our orientation correct here, one of the things about this, about New York, is there is a river that flows down to New York pretty much like this. Does anybody know what river that is from their geography work as well? Anna, go ahead.
It's the Hudson River.
The Hudson River. Very good. Okay, we're getting our geography down here. So what the British wanted to do was to cut the colonies in two. Their strategy was to, this is a famous military strategy. It's called divide and conquer. Divide and conquer. If all of the American colonies are working together very well, that's harder to win. If you can get this part to be separate from this part, well, that means that they can't work together. Makes it easier to defeat them. So it's called divide and conquer. And we also know that they already had taken over this area. We call this Quebec. And here on this map is useful. There's a lake called Lake Champlain. And so there are rivers and so on that allow you to come down from Quebec into New York. So there was a kind of a corridor here. And so if you were to come in, I'm going to have to switch colors here. Let's go over here. Right? If you were to come, if you're the British and you come in here and you come in here, then you can, from both sides, take over this line and split the colonies in two. That was the British strategy. And the American strategy, of course, was, well, it wasn't just to stop this. The problem for the Americans, the problem for George Washington was this. There was no way that they could make a force, an army, as powerful as the British army just by snapping their fingers. The thing about the British Empire at the time was, it was an empire. And so that meant that it had a professional army and navy that was constantly working on the problem of war and getting really good at it. What did America have? Remember, there was a name for... The Minutemen were part of something. What was the name for that? Abby?
A militia.
A militia, right? Which is an army of citizen soldiers. They're regular folks. They're farmers and so on. And then, well, they get their guns and they go to try to fight. But they're not professionals. So what did George Washington need to do with this informal, amateur army? What did he need to do? And what would he... in order to make them good enough to face the British, right, Rosetta?
He needs to train them.
He needs to train them and turn them into a real fighting force. And that takes what?
That takes a long time.
Time, right? Exactly. Time and effort and resources. And so there was no way that the American colonists could fight the British right away. So George Washington had to fight a very special kind of war. A war in which your main goal is not to win right away, which seems kind of strange, but your goal is to win time. That was the value that he needed, to win time in order to train his militia. This is called a war of attrition. There's a good vocabulary word, and I'll go ahead and chat it to you guys. Okay? So let's see here. I'm going to get my chat box kind of set up. Okay? So this is called a war of attrition. There's a good vocabulary word. So a war that you fight where you are basically not able to win. So your main goal is to make the war last longer. That's all. So that you can get better and better. And in the end, you can win. So George Washington had to fight a war of attrition. And basically, he couldn't stop this from happening. He couldn't stop the British. The British came in and landed at New York, and Washington was there, and he knew that he could not stop the British. So he began to retreat. And many armies and many great generals in history have had to do this. Faced with an overwhelming enemy, you don't fight. This is one of the main truths of military geniuses through history. Don't fight a battle that you're going to lose. I mean, why do that, right? Live to fight another day. And so Washington retreated from New York and across New Jersey. And so he ended up now at this location right here, which I'm now going to plot. And does anybody know what river that is? The one that forms the very border, in effect, between New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Nobody remembers that one? This is kind of why geography gets good, especially in military history. You need to know geography. Of course, we're not doing a lot of serious military history here. That's called the Delaware River. Which is good, right? Because it starts right there with the state of Delaware. That kind of maybe will help you to remember. All right, the Delaware River. He had to retreat across that into Pennsylvania. This was a really tough situation because how far can you retreat? if you keep on retreating, all right, so, you know, if George Washington was forced to retreat from New York to Philadelphia, okay, you know, that might be a useful, normal thing to do. But what happens if you retreat all the way over here? What happens if you have to retreat all the way over here? At some point, what's happened? If you keep on retreating, here's kind of a tough part of a war of attrition, right? What happens if you just keep on retreating? Abby?
You can lose the war.
You lose. That's it. I mean, there's only so much you can call it whatever you want. But if all you're doing is retreating, then you're going to lose, because you're going to end up in the middle of nowhere and your army won't have any supplies or food and you won't be able to fight. And meanwhile, your enemy has taken over everything. So you lost. Right? So there's only so much you can do in a war of attrition. There's only so much time you can buy, and you need something. So, Washington needed to train his men, and then he needed one more thing. He needed time to train his men, and he needed one more thing. To defeat a superpower like Great Britain. What did he need? America was nowhere near a match for Britain. Therefore, if you can't possibly win on your own, what do you need? Nemo.
An ally.
An ally. Was there a good choice? Okay, everybody's going to put their hands up for this one. Guaranteed. Because was there a country that hated England? I wonder, does anybody in the class perhaps remember a country that didn't like England very much, that might want to be allies with America? Patrick is raising his hand. France, right? Exactly. And England had taken North America away from France. They were worst enemies forever. So George Washington was going to need to gain time, and then he was going to have to try to bring in France as an ally. Okay, but now we have a challenge here. Just because France hates England, does that mean they're going to want to become your ally? Is that enough of a reason? Well, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. If your answer is yes or no, I hope you also have a reason why. Walker?
I was going to say no.
You're not enough of a reason. Okay. Why not? Why do you think it's not enough of a reason?
It's not enough of a reason because wars cost a lot of money.
Okay, you're on the right track, Walker. Wars cost a lot of money, and they also cost a lot of lives. War is death and destruction on a vast scale. So just because you don't like somebody else doesn't mean you want to fight a war against them at any particular moment, right? So there was going to be a great cost. There was going to be loss of life. So France needed something to be convinced to join. What did Washington need to do to convince them that, well, this is something they should bother doing? Abby?
Did he need to offer them money?
No, America wasn't rich yet. America was a set of colonies to Britain. Britain was rich. Walker?
They could pay them later.
Well, true enough, but that's not it. I mean, promises to pay, there's plenty of that in the world, and it doesn't always work out. So, no, they needed to be able to show the French something right at the beginning. Or in order to get them to be allies, they needed to show France something. Nemo?
Maybe giving them land?
Maybe that's another good offer to potentially, again, promise to give them something. But no, the Americans did not want France in America. They knew that France was an enemy of Britain, but they didn't want France in their backyard. So, no, that's not it. They needed to be able to show France that they were going to win. Why would you want to fight a war? Right? Why would you waste your money and kill your own people if you're going to lose?
So Washington needed to be able to show the French that Americans were worthy allies. Right? He couldn't just retreat and wait for the French to save your neck. No way. The French were going to say, why should we help you? All you guys do is run away. Right? So what George Washington needed to do, he could not just constantly retreat like this. He had to stop, turn around, and face the British at some point. And so we arrive at a famous moment in American history, a really frightening situation. George Washington had retreated across the Delaware. He knew this problem. He knew that his army wasn't really ready. He could not defeat the British by himself. He needed the French. But in order to get the French, he needed to show the French that they were strong. What a difficult situation. He really was very desperate. He wrote to his brother, and he wrote to his brother a letter, and in the letter it said, I think the game is pretty near up. No man, I believe, has ever had a greater choice of difficulties and less means to extricate himself from them. I like that phrase. No man has ever had a greater choice of difficulties. That's a strange phrase, right? So he's saying, I can't believe how hard this is. What am I going to do? Right? Well, so he thought up of a brilliant strategy. The British, with their allies, were coming across and were going to try to get to him. But luckily, the winter was coming, and mostly in the past, armies didn't fight in the winter. They found a spot with nice warm quarters, settled down, waited for the spring. And so, because it's too hard, I mean, just the winter is really hard to live in, especially when you don't have modern technology, right? So they were hunting him down, but by the time winter came, they had decided to stay across in New Jersey while Washington was in Pennsylvania across the Delaware River. And then he came up with a brilliant plan. On Christmas, when nobody would think that you would fight, he snuck across the Delaware River at night with his army. This is shown. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get this up. Now I can't have annotations and images at the same time. Oh, well. So this painting, it was one painting that shows us this this crossing of Washington with his men across a river that is starting to ice over. And they are bringing their men and weapons across at night. To get to the British side, where and to attack, to launch a sneak attack, and this was successful. This is one painting of this moment of Washington crossing the Delaware. There's another much more famous one that we are going to look at in history through art. This one is not that great, so I just thought I'd use it now rather than later. You will see a much, much greater version of this in history through art. So he crossed the Delaware on a sneak attack on Christmas and defeated the enemy in the first great battle called the Battle of Trenton. So that was great. One demonstration of great general ability. And then the reinforcements were coming and he tricked them. And he won a second battle in New Jersey as well. So he was starting to win battles. That was great. And the French were noticing. Nash, put your hand down unless you still have a question or comment. So the French were starting to take note, but it was going to take a little bit more than that. The battles that Washington won were kind of smallish battles. They were great battles, and people admired him. Back in Europe, he was becoming famous, this General Washington. And people were creating little models of the terrain, and generals were talking about what he had done, and they were kind of celebrating his abilities. But the thing was, the British were coming down, as I already showed you, I'll do it again here, were coming down from Quebec, so there was this danger now that he was still not going to be able to stop them from accomplishing their important goals. Here they come down from Quebec, right, all the way down to the Hudson River on here. And so There's going to need to be another victory of some sort to stop them from doing this right here. And so it came. It wasn't George Washington who did it, but there were some other commanders, two famous commanders, one named Benedict Arnold and one named Horatio Gates. And they won this great battle, which is called the Battle of Saratoga. So now the French were looking at the Americans and thinking, these guys are worthy allies. They're capable of beating the British. We hate the British. Let's be allies. Let's fight. So the alliance with France was coming, but it was going to take time. It was going to take time for the French to come, and then it was going to take time to create a strategy to be able to work together and figure out what was the best way to combine their forces. So we get to this moment, kind of the low point of the American Revolution. And this is quite a beautiful painting that is by an artist named William Trigo. And Washington was in Pennsylvania in the winter at a place called Valley Forge in the winter of 1777-78. And you can see here, it's a beautiful painting with remarkable colors and everything, but you can feel the snow, you can feel the cold, and look at the American soldiers. Look at the militia that George Washington has. And look like over here. What do you see? Look at this character over here. Unbelievable. Today, it's almost unimaginable that this is possible. But what do you see, Abby?
Bare feet.
Bare feet. Can anybody here imagine being barefoot in the snow? That's it. You had a pair of boots, one pair of boots. Because did people have a lot of clothing in the past? It was not easy to make clothing. We live in a time where what's called the Industrial Revolution, as many pairs of shoes as we could possibly want. But back then, no, it's very difficult to make enough clothing. So you see people here without their feet and their legs are not covered. And they're looking really ragged. And they are marching to Valley Forge. And they're going to spend the winter like this. How could they even survive? This was certainly the most challenging time of the American Revolution. And Thomas Paine was a famous writer, and he wrote an essay called The American Crisis. And his words are so beautiful. They're very sad, but they're very beautiful and poetic. So I wanted to read you about this moment that Thomas Paine was writing about, where it was the lowest point in the Revolutionary War. So here's what Thomas Paine wrote about this. He said, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of his country. But he stands it now, deserves the loves and thanks of men and women. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph." What beautiful words, right? Sunshine patriot, the summer soldier. That's the person who is willing to fight when it's easy. What was needed here? Not a summer soldier. Abby?
A winter soldier.
Winter soldier, yeah, indeed. A true patriot. Capable of fighting when you don't even have any boots in the snow. Unbelievable, wondrous heroism of Washington and his men at Valley Forge. The alliance with France came. And, of course, the question was how to do it. how to win a victory with French help. And finally, it did come. Washington and his men connived a battle, made a plan with the French to surround the main British army in America at a place called Yorktown. As it turns out, I forgot to have a handout on that here, but what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to quickly search for it. Why not, right? Because if we go to images and we do Battle of Yorktown, first of all, we can maybe find a map of it. And also, yeah, so this, there's a few different really good ones of the Battle of Yorktown. Yeah, I wanted to have a better map. I'm sorry about that. I should have had that ready before class, but I was a little bit too busy. So Yorktown, maybe we can get a location. There we go. This is a good one. If we get a location, there you go. Notice where it is. Down here in Virginia. Okay, this was the spot. And this is a good map because it shows us the French fleet came here. And so the British could not escape. They had their backs to the sea, and Washington came with his army and surrounded them on land and fought this battle, and the British were forced to surrender. And that's actually what most of the images of the Battle of Yorktown is this really cool painting, which is the surrender of the British. So here you see the Americans lined up on the right-hand side. And in fact, does anybody recognize who this is? Oopsie, I'm sorry. Does anybody recognize who this is? Interesting that he's not in the middle. He's not in the middle of the painting. Walker, Allison?
George Washington.
It's George Washington, right? The commander of the American forces. But the British commander was so embarrassed and ashamed and such a spoil sport that he refused to surrender to Washington. So instead, he insisted on surrendering to somebody else. I can't remember the exact details of the moment, but he refused to surrender to Washington. So Washington is not actually in the center of this painting, but this is the British surrender. And this victory was, defeat for the British was very demoralizing. They, of course, were just shocked and embarrassed and demoralized by this defeat. And so one thing that is a funny symbol of this defeat was that the American ambassadors went to England, and they, in 1783, after the end of the war, and they made a treaty with England. And it was customary in history, in Europe, in the world, that the ambassadors would sit for a painting whenever important historical treaties were signed. And this is the painting. Does anybody know why it looks so funny? Pretty embarrassing for the British, quite frankly. Abby?
Is it old?
Sorry?
Is it old?
Old? No. No, so yeah, the yellowishness of this picture is kind of maybe because this is an older image. But why does this painting look so strange? What is this? This is nothing. It's empty. Why is it so strange? Why? It's basically unfinished. Rosetta?
He probably blocked out the king?
No, nice try. Walker, Allison, one last guess.
It wasn't finished?
Yes, but there's a reason why. Because the British refused to sit for the painting. This is Benjamin Franklin. These are the Americans. They refused to sit for the painting. So this is the painting of the Treaty of Peace that led to the United States of America, and the British didn't want to sit for the painting. So that is just a funny ending to the story. A very heroic story, of course, with Washington winning his war of attrition, bringing France in as an ally, and victory at Yorktown, and America was now safe. The next part of our story, then, is what now? We won the war. Is that all that needs to happen? There's something else that needs to happen. We've got 13 separate states. What's going to happen? Are they going to be 13 separate countries? Or what? Is that a good solution? Could they just be kind of friends and be separate countries? And the Founding Fathers were going to have to talk this over and figure out whether or not that was going to be a sufficient solution. I think you guys know the answer they came up with. I hope. Because you're living in it. Okay, thanks everybody. So tomorrow we will start to look at the what is, to my mind, one of the greatest paintings ever created, which has to do with Washington crossing the Delaware. But you're going to see a wonderful version of it. So I'm very excited about that. Okay, bye folks. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye. I guess hopefully I'm done with these lectures.